here on WGH Talk. It's Over the Back Fence with Pastor Steve Whitaker and myself, Scott Spears, can be heard every Friday morning live from 9:15 to 10 a.m., replayed on Sunday morning from 8:15 to 9 a.m., and replayed on Wednesday and Thursday from 3:15 until 4 p.m. You can also get it on the website, WWGH1071.com, by going to Program Archives. We're the first show under there. And if you go to the Facebook page, usually within 24 hours after this show airs, there'll be a picture of Pastor Whitaker and I and a link to listen to the show. So do that as we head into the big Thanksgiving holiday this coming Thursday. My goodness, Pastor Whitaker, it's come up quick.
Oh, it snuck up on us. You know, and I can't believe how quickly. I'll tell you what, I can't believe how quickly it's sneaking up. It's just Christmas is right around the corner. And normally, I'm kind of ahead of the game, and I feel like I'm kind of behind the game this year. Hey, I am Pastor Steve Whitaker from Community Christian Fellowship in Prospect, Ohio. I also want to throw a shout-out there to Jeff's Bicycle Shop in Prospect. He has a lot of neat electric bikes in this year. Be a great Christmas present for people, I would think.
You know, tell people what an electric bike is who don't know, because this is a popular gift this year.
Yeah, it really, really is. It is a bike that runs on battery. It charges. And normally they have about a 20 to 30 mile range. That's if you use straight battery, but you pedal also. So you pedal, and if you get tired, you use the battery. Now you don't have to. You don't have to use the battery. You don't have to use the pedals. Either way, it'll work back and forth. But it's really nice, especially for a lot of times for elderly people that still like to bike ride. But you find out when you're out there about a mile and a half and you hit a little bit of a hill, you can't make it. You know.
So it helps you along.
It helps you along so you can just keep enjoying yourself. And, you know, they're really not all that expensive when you look at the price of everything else today.
Isn't that the truth? With Thanksgiving coming up, what do you think about this time of year?
Well, you know, I guess to be thankful, first thing we got to do is slow down a little bit and think about it. Hopefully we live in a thankful attitude every day with our life. You know, just in general, we're thankful for what we have. But I see everyone rushing so many directions, and it's so hard for people to just really stop and appreciate the things that are important. What do you think about that, Scott?
Well, I think that's exactly true. I think we are rush. You know, kids are in sports. Programs are going on. There are commitments we just have in general. And sometimes the commitments we have in general, which we enjoy, just because they're there and you've added all this new stuff, make things so difficult. And that's why I think a lot of times all these extracurricular things you've got going on in your life, they do suffer during the holiday time because there's so much else going on that normally would not be.
Well, I wasn't going to talk about this situation today until you just brought it up, Scott.
I went right and not planned.
No, not planned at all. But I want to say something. It's funny you mentioned the extracurricular activities. I was just talking to a mom yesterday, and she was telling me that, you know, they just don't stop. And because they have several different kids, and they are in several different kids that are in different sports and different this and different that. And, you know, I know it's great to stay involved and your kids want to do all these things. But really, I wonder sometimes if we ought to step back and say, what is the actual price of this? Or what are we teaching our kids? Because I've noticed that in my own family, when we run all the time, our kids run all the time. Now their kids are running all the time. And I don't want to get on a good old boys subject or good old day subject. We're good old boys, either one. But a good old day subject. But what I do want to say is this. You know, there was a lot to be said for simplicity and sitting around a dinner table calmly. Well, if you weren't arguing as a family, but anyway, but sitting around a dinner table and just having that set schedule, I think that we use, there was a lot less Prozac being swallowed, and, you know, and families were closer. They weren't just jetting off everywhere. You know, something, one of the things that I hear so many parents and grandparents say that is a burden on their heart is that their kids aren't around. You know, their kids have moved out of state. Their kids have, you know, they're all over the country. They don't get to see their grandkids maybe once a year, sometimes not even that. And that means a lot to you. That really will mean a lot to you as you get older. I know it certainly does to us. But, you know, if you think about it, when we're all going in 30 directions and you're not getting that familial bond that, that families used to have, people don't think twice about up and moving. You know, the thing that kept Shirley and I from moving and going south, or because, you know, when it started to get, I don't like the cold. But that because once our kids were raised and they started having kids, we weren't going to leave. We couldn't go anywhere. You know, our family's too close for that. And it's a blessing. Many people often tell us, boy, you guys are so lucky. You guys are so lucky. Your family's all right here. Well, in a way, it was almost planned because we kept that family bond, and family was so important. Activities weren't important. Family was important. And I think that's something that this Thanksgiving I can be very thankful for.
You know, it's very interesting. I think about this a lot. And the other night I was having a conversation with somebody who has a big family. I think, see, a lot of times when we say senior citizen, I think what people think are people over 60, 65. And that's really not the group I'm talking about, because technically you're a senior citizen, but you are still probably at that age, grandma or grandpa. And you're still in the fold. Grandma and grandpa are still in the fold. And I saw this happen with my grandparents because they lived to great old ages, and they had, you know, four kids. So they were not a small family. And when they were grandma and grandpa, they're still in the fold. But when your kids become grandma and grandpa, if you're lucky enough to live that long, which my grandparents were, and the person I was talking to the other night was, when you become great grandma or grandpa, you are removed. And I don't, not purposely.
I don't think that's funny. I just thought how ironic.
Purpose. It's not purposely done.
Yes, God had a way, but I'll say something about that. I think for two reasons. Unfortunately, this is a condition of just people in general. We have moved to where people become irrelevant if they're not actively doing what you're doing or can get involved in the current conversation that you're involved in. And a lot of times, by the time people get to be great-grandparents, they are in an older stage, you know. And, dad doesn't understand. You know, he's old school. He's old-fashioned. You know, mom, you know, she's just going to bring up stuff from, you know. And everybody wants – I'm telling you that we are way too hung up on our progressive society. And society used to hold in highest regard those oldest in age. Do you remember that? And that's worldwide. That's been throughout history. They held them up for wisdom, for guidance, for memory of what used to be. I used to love and sit and prod my grandmother's mind about everything she could tell me about when she was little. And Shirley's mom came over here from, she was a war bride for World War II, and she came over here from Wales, and she loved to talk, and I would sit there and I'd prompt her and get her going, and she'd tell me I just listened to her forever talking about that stuff. And a lot of it was, you know, once you got her going, she wasn't going to stop. So, you know, you kind of opened the Pandora's box. But she enjoyed doing that, and I think that we need to learn to go back to our great-grandparents and before they're gone and find out the things about their life that's important stuff.
Well, the interesting thing to me, and it was particularly with my grandmother, because that was my mom's mom. Now, when she was my grandmother and I was young, you know, my mom would depend on her for a lot. You know, you want to watch the kids for a little while, and we had Christmases at their house and everything. But when my mom became a grandmother, she certainly didn't love her mother any less, and I certainly didn't think of her as a grandmother any less. But when you have adult grandchildren and your grandchildren have kids, what happened with her then, she became Nana. Well, Nana, you're not going to ask Nana to babysit the little kids because Nana's far along in age at this point. And my grandmother even said, who had five kids and babysat all her grandkids when she was young, she said at that age she didn't trust herself anymore to babysit kids because kids screaming bothered her a little more as she got older. And also she didn't have the energy just to keep up with a little kid running around. And she didn't want to put the kid in that situation. So that removed her a little bit. And also, when the grandkid, the little child, 5 years old, is running to their grandparent, they're running to your child. They're not running to you. So it's a weird thing that happens.
Yeah, it is. It is. I just really believe that in the right situation, when families are close and handled the way they should, that all works out so well. The only thing I'm a little leery of sometimes with older people, and I better watch it. My kids are going to say something to me. I'm getting older, but I remember when my mom started getting in her last few years, I was a little leery to eat anything at her house, and because I never knew how long something had been in the refrigerator, or you know, she just wasn't as sharp about what she did, and that's one thing that you're a little leery of. And but you know. I don't know. I think that we owe it to them to try to make them included in everything that we do.
Oh, I think absolutely. And she was always there. But it's interesting you bring up food, because the lady I was talking to the other night, who is now a great grandmother and talked about being a little more removed at this point in her life, still active. Still drives, still gets around, but had said that for Thanksgiving, her family wanted her to make this rather exotic cake that she has always made. And she said, I just had to tell them, I just don't have the energy to do that anymore.
That's when grandmother, great-grandmother says, you know what, how about we sit down and I go through the recipe and you can start the tradition doing that. You can be the one to carry that on because it's your turn now. You know, there's those things that can happen and you can do that. One of the things that when I find things that belong to family or something of that nature, I have to scratch my head and think, which one, who is this going to mean something to that's going to hang on to it? One thing that broke my heart, after my mom died, I wanted something very special to go to a niece, and they don't even have it anymore, and it's in a box somewhere, and I wish that I'd given it to one of my daughters, because I know how they would have loved it and appreciated it and hung on to it. And, you know, it's just, you know, and there was some controversy over that too, the fact that she got it, but so what, you know, I really think that where we're at, where we come from, what molded us, what made us who we are, is such an important thing to know. You know, when you lose your footing and your heritage and where you come from and who you are as a family, it's so easy to be tossed about here and there and go anywhere. That's one of the reasons people are moving all over the country. There's just no bond to stay where you're at. I look at my children's children, and you know, the jury's still out, because some are adults and some are well on their way to being adults. But it looks to me like the ones that are adults now are probably going to, for the most part, stay here. They're very attached to their families too, and the breakdown of the American family. I think you can talk anyone you want to. The truth of the matter is, one of the largest problems in we're facing in society today is the breakdown of the nuclear family. That nucleus of mom and dad and kids and family and bonding and kitchen table dinner and doing things together and depending on each other and being there for each other. And because that has so broke down, people lose their desire for attachment. And you see what's happened with our divorce rate in the country. I mean, when I was a kid, I don't know that I knew any kids in my classroom that weren't with mom and dad. And now, I mean, what, 30% are with biological parents now by the time they're in middle school? And it's just because it's that breakdown. And I think that if we're going to save our society, we better start just winding things down a little. What's really important? You know, a lot of people don't want to go to church, and that's their prerogative, whether they go or not. But church was just one more of those things, really, that everyone did together. We were talking about this the other day, the other evening at church, a few of us were just talking about when we even how churches have changed. You know, when I was growing up, you went to the church that you went to from the time that you were very young until you were an adult, and everyone else did too. And you see, you had the same friends and the same families. Now people church hop. It's insane. You know, one minute you think you have somebody that's a close member of the church and close to you, and you feel like family, and then all of a sudden they're not there. Well, they thought they'd try this place out over there. You don't do that to family. But see, here's the thing. People stop viewing church as family, family as family. They just up and go and do whatever they want. And I just don't believe that's the way it's meant to be, and it's been a huge hurt on our society. So my Thanksgiving thankfulness today, one of them is one that I have Jesus Christ in my life. That would be number one. But number two would certainly be that I have a family that understands family.
You know, one thing I've noticed over the years when it comes to the nuclear family, your nuclear family is people consider mom, dad, and I think the ideal number now is two children, but it's your children. And what's interesting to me is how long people spend trying to recreate this if there has been a divorce. And the truth of the matter of what I've seen, and people can prove me wrong if they'd like, you can't recreate that once there's been a split. You can bring another spouse in there, but that is not that child's father, and if that or mother. And if that child knows that, now you can live. I'm not saying your life has to end because you had a divorce.
It could be a wonderful life.
It could
yes.
be, but it's you cannot recreate it.
You're right, and that is the reason that we should that you know. I explain to people in marriage counseling. I say, hey, look. When they're going to get married, you know, a couple that's betrothed to each other. And I'll explain to them, look, as far as I'm concerned, this is it. You guys need to make a decision. You know, you're going to be with each other through thick and thin, through high and low, through everything. And that's how you get stronger. You know, you grow through adversity, not through the good times. And you're going to grow together. And if you're willing to do that, get married. But if you're not, don't. Because people don't, the collateral damage. That's one more thing that the collateral damage of divorce is that you can't recreate that family, because what you've done now is you have added a second set of parents. I know that that's another thing around the holidays that we deal with. You know, now it used to be everybody would typically a family would go to their parents on Thanksgiving, and what they would do is they would alternate, you know, this year I go to your parents, next year I'll go to my parents, or they would do one in the morning this year and we stop on, you know, whatever, however that worked. But now it's taken 3 and 4 weekends and maybe a whole month to visit all the family, because so that nobody feels hurt and left out. And it's just, it creates, once again, there's that much more stress in the family because of it. And you're right, Scott, I hadn't really, that's something that wasn't on my mind about not being able to recreate that nuclear family, but you can't.
No, and it also goes when somebody leaves us, when somebody departs, when they die. I mean, of course you miss them on the holiday, especially if it's the first holiday after they've left, but you're never going to recreate that, so you have to find a way to create something maybe a little different, but it is still enjoyable for everybody.
Yeah, I agree. You know, and you know, think about, you know, I feel for the parent that, you know, there's no greater joy to me than, or one of the greatest joys, I should say, is seeing your kid's face on Christmas morning when they come down the steps. And how many parents at Christmas time are not going to be able to see that because, oh, they had to go to dad's this year. And yeah, that's heartbreaking. That hurts. And, you know, there's so many things that our current lifestyle in this country have caused, and this wonderful change of society we have, it's left so many people insecure and not feeling like they're loved or wanted. Like I've brought up many times, no one knew when I was growing up, ever heard of teen suicide. If that ever happened, it was so far removed from our normal thought that it would stop us in our tracks and think, what in the world was going on with that person? Now, I remember one year when I was an EMT, along with the other hats I wear, but I remember one time in a period of a year and a half, I think I was on 4 suicides of people under 22 years old in a rural area. And it's like, it's because they don't feel like there's any hope. They're, you know, family's here, dad's over there, dad's got a new wife, and I don't get along with her, and she doesn't like me. And how many times do you hear that? You know, I hear so many times, well, yeah, so-and-so got remarried, and yeah, but, you know, she really doesn't like so-and-so, and it's becoming harder. She, like, you know, she favors her kids over his kids, and all that stuff we bring about out of the simple decision not to stay married.
You know what I wish people would do during the holidays, that time between Thanksgiving and Christmas? I wish they would do it all year round, but, you know, if we're going to prompt something during the holiday time, I wish people would really look at relationships in their life that no longer are there, but the people are still there, and really remember the positive ones.
Amen.
Now, don't remember the negative, but remember the positive ones.
You know, I've got a friend at church. She's in her 80s, and she is a wonderful lady and just a caring lady. But she has been divorced now for I don't know how many years, but it's been a long, long time. Close to 50 years she's been divorced. And it was a situation where her husband just went off and married, so, you know, one of those kind of things. But, you know, it's really funny. She had stayed closer probably than him, to his own family over the years. And, you know, has visited, and, you know, there wasn't a problem between them. I don't think that you have to, I don't think there has to be a war in that taking sides. I want to go back to something I said again a minute ago, because I don't want to seem calloused when I said, you know, just stay married. And I could just hear somebody listening to the radio thinking, oh, yeah, buddy, you weren't married to the monster I was. Or you weren't married to that alcoholic or to that drug addict. And I know that, and I get that. But what I'm saying is this. This is where we have to go back to personal responsibility. And it's not just the bride, and it's not just the groom. It's both of them have to have. You know, there's no reason that she should have to be married to a monster, because he shouldn't be a monster. If he's loving her like he should love her, he's not going to be that monster. You know, if his kids are coming first and she's coming first, he's not going to be out there doing drugs and getting drunk and not coming home. We've got to set a standard. And I would challenge young people. I really would challenge young people to seriously know the person that you're with before you ever think about marrying them. Because if they've got some flaws that you can see building and not getting better, if they don't clean their house up before you get married, they're never going to clean their house up after you're married.
Well, and it's interesting to me, because what I have noticed over the years is that if you're around somebody for 2, 3, 4 years, and maybe you're not in a relationship or married, maybe you just know the person for a long time and you know what they've done for people you know that person in a certain way. So why does everything come with strife? You know, why does everything in our life have to end in strife? I don't really understand that. I'm not saying you have to be best friends with the person, but my goodness, at some point you should be thankful that that person was around. Nobody becomes evil overnight.
No, they don't. They don't. It's you're going to see hints of it.
Yeah.
And a lot of times people will say, you know, when I married him, I never saw any of this, and they changed. Well, I think that is, once again, where you have to, if a farmer goes out and he plants a field, excuse me, farmer goes out and he plants a field and just lets it go, what's going to happen? Weeds are going to grow up, and it's not going to yield worth a nickel. You're not going to get anything. You know, they're going to have very little things on the plant. Farmer goes out and he plants a field, and he cultivates it, gets the weeds out, he fertilizes it. He may have just a bumper crop if things work out well. It's the same thing with our relationships and our marriage. You know, a lot of times people say, well, he wouldn't like that way when we got married. Well, were the two of you cultivating? Were you fertilizing? Were you nurturing? Were you seeing those things come along and saying, wait a minute, we got to get back on track? And it's just important. You know, marriage isn't just a fling. It's a job.
Yeah, and I think I just think it's a time frame issue for people. I wish people waited longer. I really think it takes about 2 years, especially if you're not living with the person, to really catch all their moods. Because there is that stage, and we've talked about it so many times, there is that stage where people, if I'm not living with you, and I'm with you 2 or 3 hours a day, I probably do seem like a little different person than if you were around me 24 hours a day.
I think so, but I think that if you make that commitment, when Shirley and I got married, it'll be 46 years this year, and when we got married as kids, and I mean we were kids, we made that commitment to be, we never considered the thought that we'd get divorced. And because of that, you know, she had some stuff to get used to, and boy, so did I. We both did. But it was one of those things where, okay, here we are, and okay, this is the way it is. We're going to get, you know, we're gonna learn to do this. And that was our general attitude with everything. And has it been roses? Of course not. Of course there's been some thorns and hills and bumps. But there's been some wonderful time, too, and a lot of wonderful time. And that's in any relationship. I don't know why people look at marriage so much, and they put it, it's 80%. They put 80% emotional into it and 20% of commitment. And honestly, it should be about 80% commitment and 20% emotional.
Well, I think it's right. And I hate to say it, and I've said it 1,000 times. I think a lot of it's money driven. It's very hard to be a single mother. It's very hard to be a single father. It's very hard financially. It's very hard because you don't have somebody in the home to turn around to and vent. And you know what? I think that's why a lot of people get married. I think they don't think that that's why they're doing it. But you can see it if you're a third party. And it's sad because it usually doesn't end well.
Well, speaking of the last few minutes, I might want to shift gears a little bit here because you just brought something up. You know, this over the back fence stuff, this is what it does. It spurs other conversations. And and I'm not talking about doomsdayers by any means. But I know that I listen to a lot of financial reports and a lot of financial people, and I pick up the Wall Street Journal and read a lot of that. And there are so many indicators right now that we could be heading for a real meltdown. A lot of it is because of the commercial real estate market is heading for an explosion. And there's a whole lot of factors behind that, and I don't want to get into any of that. But what I'm getting into is this. We very well could enter a period of time when money is very, very hard to come by. And when we're not going to be able to do the things that we did. We're not going to be able to buy the things that we did. And we're not going to be able to entertain ourselves for a period of time. We go through this in every country in the world goes through this. There's periods of time. This country's been through it. And what I'm saying is this, that if indeed that does happen, and if you can't just run down to McDonald's, or if you can't just, you know, go out to dinner, or we got kids, you can't play travel ball this year because we have no money, or kids, we don't have the gas to go here and there every night, you know, that can happen. You know it can. I remember during the gas, remember the fuel embargo back in the 80s and the long lines of cars?
Oh, terrible.
Oh, that. But anyway, my thought is this, that if that happens, you'll be okay. Shift gears. Learn to do things at home and do with less. My kids will tell you a special Christmas for them, and certainly one of our most memorable. It was during the recession that I think was back in 81, right around that time. We're talking about a long time ago. And anyway, everything just stopped. I was working. It just stopped. And we didn't have – my job did it, and we just stopped. We had no money. I mean, there wasn't anything there. And had to stay with my mom for a month. I had to move back from Springfield, and didn't. It's a long. I won't get into that. But anyway, we had no money. I was out doing all kinds of odd jobs, anything I could get in. And that was another thing that changed. I didn't run down to an agency. I went out and found odd jobs, and that's a different mindset than we have today. But anyway, it was Christmas time, and we had no money. And my son was, Matt, was to about 2, and he's at that age where he wanted to build and do everything. And you remember these little wooden benches that kids would get that would have, like, pegs you draw in them and wheels you turned and a hammer attached to them? I made one. You know, my mom had sewed a lot. She had a bunch of spools, things like that. And, you know, I found the stuff, and I made him one, and he played with it all the time. And our kids talk about how that was, they remember that as being a special Christmas because the girls got a nice doll they could love on. They didn't have eight toys to figure out which one they liked the best. They had one nice toy that was special to them. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, if my kids remember that over every other Christmas in their lifetime growing up and cherish it, was there anything bad about it? So what I'm saying to people is, you know, if we hit hard times, don't start fighting about what you can't do. Figure out what you can do and make the best of what you can do.
You know, I thought this happened not because of finances, but during the first year and a half of the pandemic, from when it came in March of 20, probably through the beginning of probably 2021, really, maybe more than that, maybe 22. But when restaurants were not open, when museums were not open, when there weren't those things you could do, you really had to be creative if you wanted to go out and do things. And I remember during that time when I went out and did things on the weekend, I spent more times in more parks and more cemeteries in more places that I would have never visited on my own, but just because there were lack of things to do. You couldn't go in a restaurant. You couldn't go in to a museum. You couldn't go in to a party. People weren't together. You had to do things in a different way. And I think I look back on that now as a very fun time because you had to be creative.
And you know, how quickly we forget. Why didn't I remember to bring that up? Because, you know, it was just during the COVID time. So I heard so many families talk about, you know, we're playing board games for the first time ever. We're getting things done at home we never got before. Do you know it got to the point you couldn't even buy building materials. It's not because they weren't producing
them. That's right.
It's because everybody was building decks and fences, and it was really funny. That's when the big chicken boom hit. I mean, now you go into TSC or Rural King, you see chickens there 10 months out of the year because everybody, we're going to raise chickens, you know. And if you were rural, and of course, before that, it was, you know, you had like a four-week period in spring to get them or they were gone. But everyone's got into their little backyard farming and gardening. You could not find candy jars to save your, you know, because everybody, they were going back. And you know what? This is what's crazy, Scott. Everyone you talked to enjoyed it.
They did.
But when it was over with, they slipped right back into their funk. Now you can get all the candy jars you want. You know, you can, you know, there's lumber everywhere. Maybe they got all the decks built. I don't know.
It was just very interesting to me how people eased right back in to the life. And now people are saying, boy, I remember that time. That was a fun time. I wish we could go back to that. But they don't.
But they don't. They don't because of pressure. Oh, my, you know, I don't want to disappoint my kids. How many times have people said that? And what they don't realize is sometimes with proper nurturing, a little disappointment has to be plugged into it at the time. Sometimes with proper nurturing, you got to tell your kids what's best for them. Maybe they don't realize it at the time. I was talking to a coach the other day, and we were just kind of laughing about not really laughing, but just kind of how ironic it was that so many people today, you see all these kids and the money they're pouring in to athletics. None of these kids are going to play pro ball.
No.
1 in 5 million are going to play pro ball. I mean, it's just, and as far as college, the whole college scholarship thing, no. They've got the schools have got that worked out too. Unless you are unbelievably exceptional, no free rides, you know. And if you're in a smaller school, a community college or whatever it's going to be, you know, there's no free ride. I mean, some schools will give you tuition breaks, but then you still got housing. Some, you know, they work it back and forth. Some, by law, can't give you that much. But it makes far more sense to get an academic scholarship and work on grants. My granddaughter, Lauren, I'm so proud of her. She is a teacher now in Marion City Schools. She teaches first grade in Marion City. She graduated, I don't know, it's been 5 years ago now, I think. She worked all the time, went to school full-time at Marion OSU. In 3.5 years, she graduated with her teaching degree. She had no student debt, and it was because she worked hard on grants. She worked her can off on working, cleaning houses for people. You name it, she did it. She made great relationships with people during the time, too. But you know what? In 3.5 years, she walked out of there with no debt, and she's a teacher now in Marion City Schools. So the truth is, you can do it. And she didn't need scholarships. She didn't need all this hope and wish and, oh, there's no way kids can go to school today. Yeah, they can. She did it. You just got to decide, look, there's going to take the next 2 or 3 years. I got to buckle down and do something if I'm going to make anything, if I'm going to set a goal and do it. I'd rather teach my kids firm lessons and hard goals than pipe dreams and what ifs.
You know, people forget, though. You know, it's interesting. You know, a lot of people in life who came up maybe with not so much money, and they're aware that they came up with not so much money, and they had to pay and scrimp and save and do everything they had to do to get what they have, but then they turn around with their kids and give it to them. And I always hear the example, I don't want them to go through what I had to go through.
Oh my! And you think, how are you doing in life? We're doing pretty well. Well, maybe what you went through is why you're doing pretty well.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm sure maybe your parents would have wanted to help you out a little more and give you a little more, but the whole philosophy of what you're doing now came out of that you want to help your kids, which I'm not saying is not an admirable thing to want to do. It is, but you got that philosophy by coming up hard. Now, are your kids going to have that philosophy with their kids? Because you're not letting them.
The hardest thing about giving a gift is when you give it to someone and they act like they expected it, right? Like it wasn't a big deal. They're not excited. And you will find, and I know this by experience, you will find that when you spoil children, what happens is the one that you spoil the most will expect it and won't be excited. The one that you maybe let slip through the cracks and you do something special for them, they're just thrilled. They're thrilled, and I've maybe slipped through the cracks. Is the wrong term to say, but what I mean is, the more you spoil, you spoil the child, you ruin the child, and you really do. Spoiled children are not going to be there for you when you're old.
You know, but there's a lot of guilt, though. I can see this because we talked about, you got about 4 minutes left because Pastor Whitaker's got to leave about 5 minutes early today. So in the final 4 minutes with Pastor Whitaker here, the interesting thing is that what I notice is there's a lot of guilt when the kids are young. If you do come from a family that's had a divorce and you're sharing the child, or maybe you're the parent that doesn't have custody of that child, or maybe you got married to somebody else who was horrible to that child and you saw it happen, and you've built this guilt up over the 18 years that they've been growing up, when they're an adult, now you want to try to fix that. Well, I'm not saying you can't do nice things for them, but the problem is you can't erase their memory. It's always going to be there that happened.
Can I give you my antidote for that? It's my antidote, straight from Pastor Steve. It's pretty simple, and it's been around for a couple thousand years. And it's this. You can take every burden that you have, everything you've done, every mistake that you have, you can give it to God, ask Him to forgive you for it, honestly, and He will. And you ask Christ to come in your life, because that's why He died on the cross, was to cover all the sin of the world. And He says, just give it to me, and I'll take it, and it's gone. And you do that, and you ask Him to give you a life and to heal relationships, and He will. A lot of times people say that it's too late. My kids, I've already blown it. I've messed up with my kids. It is never too late for your children to see a true change in you. And that may mean more to them than anything else. I was listening to an interview with a lady that talked about how she had rejected everything that about her mother. Her mother was this real strict religious church lady. Remember church lady?
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, but later in life, her mom changed, and her mom really became true and living what she used to say. And she became a different person. And when this woman who had been estranged from her mom for years saw this change in her life, it just really made a change in their relationship. And now they have a wonderful relationship because her mom changed. And it's never too late to change your life and turn a new page and say, you know what, God, how about you walk with me and I do what I'm supposed to do versus me trying to grab at ways to fix it because obviously I've blown it.
You know, I did an interview one time and I couldn't even tell you who it was with, but it was somebody who did not have a good relationship with their mother, and their mother was on their deathbed and they were there. And she said in that moment when she went in to see her mother, and it's sad that it took to get on her deathbed, but she said she realized in that moment that her mother did the best that she could. She didn't always do the right thing, but she did the best she could.
And best the could she could with what she had upstairs and in her heart. And sometimes you got to realize people have limits, and they are a product of their environment so much that it's very hard for them to jump a hurdle that they've never seen. A hurdle to you may look 18 inches high, and to them it may look 5 feet.
That's right.
And it may, and it's the same hurdle.
True. I know you got to head out of here, Pastor Thanks, Whitaker. Christ. Thank you. See you next week. Have a great Thanksgiving.
See you, Matt.
Yep, happy Thanksgiving. All right, and again, we're going to stay on the air here for 5 more minutes. Remember, you can hear this show with Pastor Whitaker over the back fence every Friday morning from 9:15 until 10 a.m. It repeats on Sunday morning from 8:15 to 9 a.m. and Wednesday afternoon from 3:15, Wednesday and Thursday afternoon, 3:15 to 4 p.m., and you can get it on the website, wwgh1071.com. Or go to the Facebook page within 24 hours of the show airing, and it's usually there. Now, if you want to call in, we can take a call on the conversations we've been having. I saw the phone light up there once. We didn't have a chance to get to it, but we have 5 minutes left here on the tail end. Give me a buzz, 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. If you have anything to say about the program today with Pastor Whitaker, we would love to hear it. And don't forget, Matt and I will be up next hour from 10:15 to 11 a.m., and then Pastor Craig will be on from 11:15 to 12. Then we have the Exchange Club at 12 with three of us. Pastor Craig, Matt, and I from 12:15 to 1, and then we have Study His Word from 1:15 to 2 with Pastor Craig. And then tonight we have Carrington, Matt, Sean, and I from 8:15 until 10 p.m. here on this station. But if you have anything to say, we do have 4 minutes left on any of the topics we were talking about. Give us a buzz, 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Well, Matt, you got to listen to the whole program there. What do you think? Any points stick out to you on today's program?
I mean, honestly, I can't remember what all I talked about. You jumped around topics.
That's the over-the-back fence aspect of that show. Oh, we're getting a call here. Maybe this is the call we missed earlier on. Let's go to the phones. Go ahead, caller.
Yeah, Scott, you know how you guys was talking about, the recessions and people not having money and stuff with this and that? And
yeah.
There's very few people alive in this world today, in the United States especially, that know what it's like. We have a hard time sometimes having sympathy for refugees and people like that, but you take during the wars, you know, when everything was rationed and, you know, you couldn't get the goods to do, you know, or during the Depression, you know, how businesses, you know, couldn't, you know, they weren't open, you know. We don't understand that, you know, how people went through those days sometimes.
Well, that's true, and I think everybody's got their sack of rocks, and I'm not saying that people don't have it difficult. I think they do, and some people really just have it difficult emotionally. It's an emotional illness that they might have that they cannot fix. But at some point, you do have to say, this is the way it is. I hope it gets better, but this is the way it is, so let me do the best I can with what I have.
Oh, yeah, I can understand that, but, you know, back in those days, not only did you might not, you know, was having difficulties, everybody was having difficulties. There wasn't people to stand, you know, to help you out, you know. Not like there was like there is today, and that's, you know, thanks to, you know, FDR, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Then there were soup kitchens, but, You know, there weren't programs to help you out.
Well, yeah, I think there have been different stages of this over our lifetime, and I think that it's an interesting time because the holidays are great, but also I know the holidays are very depressing for a lot of people, so it's tough. I guess you just do the best with what you got, and but I do really feel that this is a good time of year to reach out to people from your past, and instead of being angry with them, if you have some kind of anger with them, apologize and tell people what they meant for you. You know, it's always a big meant to you. It's always a big thing. Don't wait for a retirement party or a death to tell people what they meant for you. And maybe this is a good time of year to do that because that can pep up somebody's day.
Well, sometimes you got to take a look at yourself and. In a situation, you know, maybe there was some anger or some difficulties between you. Was you totally right in your circumstances?
That's right. Look at yourself. Were you always right?
You know, my mom always, you know, said that out of all her kids, I was the only one that could realize I was wrong and apologize later.
It's a good trait to have.
I mean, you got to look at yourself and you got to be man enough to apologize.
You got. Hey, we're going to break. Stay with us.
Yep.
Express Corps Helen Thomas.
Helen, how do you deal with criticism? Because certainly 10 presidents, you've had.